more commercialized, but that song is a beautiful song. All right, guys. Starting on the podcast, I don't know if Soju House isn't going to come or if they're going to watch it online, but we're going to act like they are watching it online. I'm so glad that y'all are here. Do y'all want to just shift over a little bit or no? Or are we good where we are? Okay, we're good where we are. All right, that's okay with me. All right, so this is week four. I'm going to recap what we've been doing. Remember, our six-week series is based off of the scripture, "Who does not receive the kingdom of God as a little child will by no means enter it." So in week one, we talked about grace, what it's like to live under grace, to allow grace in our lives, to do as the woman who got on her knees and washed Jesus' feet with her tears and her hair. She did two things. She let grace into her life, and she let it change her heart's affection, and then she let it change her whole life's direction. And then in week two, we talked about putting the puzzle pieces we call life together. We talked about all the different things that we put in our lives to build who we are, but God designed a puzzle piece for him to be resonant in your life. He designed it from the beginning. There is something in you that can't be filled by anything except God himself. Our example was the rich young ruler. He had done everything right. He had all the pieces. He was an example that was so good that he did all the check marks. He went down all the checklists, but the one thing he needed, the one thing he didn't have is he didn't have a relationship with God like he could have. And so Jesus invited him to follow him. All he heard was sell all that he had and give to the poor and you'll have treasures in heaven. He didn't hear and follow me. Or like I like to say, be with me. Last week we talked about how God looks at you. Something that I've always asked myself, what is the face or how does the invisible God look at me? We talked that 85% of communication is nonverbal. It's not just what you say or the tones you say, but 85% of it is the countenance on your face. So we went through Moses. We talked about Moses and how he wanted so desperately to know what God's face looked like. And to be honest, as amazing as we read all the stories of Moses, he didn't have Jesus. We got Jesus. We get to see his face. We don't get to have our face covered and hidden as God walks by, but God wants to look at you face to face. So now we're at week four. For those in class, you get a little Play-Doh. You can play with it. You can keep it. Please take it home with you. I thought this would be a little fun. Tonight we're going to, subject is kind of like this. We're not going to have crafts, but you know, you can go have craft time when you get home. But I remember playing with this. I remember playing with it. I also remember when I had siblings and we couldn't afford Play-Doh because they would leave the cap open a little bit and it would dry out too fast. So Mom would make our own Play-Doh. I don't know if you've ever made homemade Play-Doh with flour and water and food coloring.
It's not the same.
But Mom didn't care.
It dries out real fast.
Just put some more water in it, sweetie. It doesn't do it. No, just put some more water in it. But I remember playing with Play-Doh and making it into shapes, and what would you do? You'd make something, and you'd go to your mom or your dad and say, "Look, I made this. Look what I made." It's kind of actually my title of my sermon tonight. I made this. Guy is drawing a M&M's picture, and he's making it very real, very lifelike. I think it's very cool. I used to do art as well. I don't think I ever got to that level. That's pretty awesome. So I picked that there not because it's food, but it's because of how cool he does it with colored pencils and things like that. But with Play-Doh, you make your Play-Doh, whatever it was, and it was always kind of funny. You go and be like, "Look, it's a horsey," and then you come back later and "Look, it's a dog," and "Look, it's a kitty," and you're like, "It's kind of the same thing. They don't ever change, unless you were real fancy and had the squeeze thing where you could make the hair and the spaghetti and, you know, all that. Look, I made a plate of spaghetti. Why is it all blue? Because we only have blue. It's all dried out. But having fun, being creative with Play-Doh is kind of what we're going to talk about. We're going to have a little fun tonight. We're going to talk about being creative and what that means. What does it mean to be a child of the king and be creative? We're kind of excited about this class. It is a note-taking kind of class tonight. So even though you don't seem like you have a lot of notes, we're going to have notes tonight. It's going to be a lot of fun. But I hope it blesses you because it's blessed me. I've worked on it. These are things that I've kind of struggled with as I put it together. I want to be a child of the king. What does that mean? I gotta be creative, like my creator. So I also started thinking about jobs, like, okay, well, when I get older, I gotta be creative. Well, who's looking for something creative? Yeah, there's artwork, there's Disney, there's things like that, but you'd be surprised who is looking for the most creative people. And that actually would be NASA. NASA looks for extremely creative people. They actually are looking for creative geniuses. Now, it takes a lot of imagination and creativity to create the ability to put someone into space. I mean, there are parts when space travel was around, when we used to do that, that it was thinner than a sheet of paper that prevented them from being outside of space, but that's all that they had. But people were creative to fit these massive machines and make them real tight and small. It took a lot of creativity. And when we put a man on the moon, it was amazing. And a lot of, some people like to, you know, be conspiracy theorists and say, no, we never put a man on the moon. It was a set. But you ask, you know, Buzz Aldrin, and he'll tell you, no, it was real. So I put on the screen here, there was Apollo 11, Apollo 12, Apollo 13. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie or if you were around when Apollo 13 happened. But that mission to the moon, where they had a horrible accident, and Tom Hanks makes that amazing line that we all know, Houston, we have a problem. They go to stir their oxygen tanks, and all of a sudden, an explosion happens while they're going to the moon, and the ship goes out of control, and they don't know what to do, and they're in a mad, mad rush. And so what do they find out? Houston says, okay, well, you're the main ship is just dying. It's literally bleeding out. You're going to be nothing. Go ahead and shut that down and get into the lunar lander. Get into that. So these three men cram in, fighting time, fighting an air leak. They shut down the main ship. They get in there, and they struggle to survive. Now, as they go, they come to realize, and this is kind of NASA's thinking, NASA only plans for what you need. So the lunar lander was only designed to have two people in there. It wasn't designed to have three. It also wasn't designed to be their life source. It was their life support system. It wasn't designed to be used for days on end. It was only supposed to be like 2 or 3 days. So it was only supposed to hold two men for 2 or 3 days. So they had cartridges which would take out your CO2. So every time you breathe in oxygen. And every time you breathe out, you breathe CO2. You get enough of that, it actually is toxic for you. If all you breathe in was CO2, you get hypoxic, you go delusional, die. That's why you don't go put your face at the end of a motorcycle or a car and sit there and smell the fumes, because it's all carbon dioxide. You get enough of that, you're gonna hurt yourself. Carbon monoxide, sorry, did I say carbon dioxide? I don't know. I don't know what I'm saying right now, I'm just teasing. So CO2 is filling in the room, and their scrubbers are designed to take that out. It's designed to take out the carbon dioxide. Now you got me messing up. Monoxide, carbon monoxide.
No, it is dioxide. Carbon dioxide is what you breathe out.
Breathe out. Carbon dioxide. See, you got me. Yeah, no, I know. You're right with carbon dioxide. I'm sorry. So the scrubbers, what they do is it filters in the air. It's kind of like your AC vent, but it's actually taking out the CO2. Well, the problem with that is those little cartridges were only designed for two men for a few days. So then their levels start rising, and they start getting delusional, and they tell Houston, hey, we've got another problem. We're getting too high on CO2. What are we going to do? So what do? They get a group of men and women, and they take them into this room. They say, all right, here you go. And they take this giant box, and they dump it on the table. Now, here's the problem. The lunar lander has a cylinder-type cartridge, but the space module has a box or cube-type scrubber. So they have plenty of those. That's designed to go for more than a couple of days. They could spend 2 or 3 weeks in space with this big old scrubber, but guess what it doesn't do? It doesn't fit in a round peg. How are they going to fit a square box into a round peg? It takes somebody creative. So they take this box of stuff. Now, what's in the box of stuff? It's all that's on the ship. Okay, guys, this is what these guys have. I know you want to think about it. Say, well, what if they had this? Well, this is all they have. So take what they have and find a way to save their life. And they do. They find a way, ripping books, using tape. They figure a way to make a square box fit in a round peg. It helps them out. There's a lot of different struggles that they do to go through that, but it was something really important that you took a creative person. And when NASA had to go through that, they finally got those men home. They realized, we've got a lot of great thinkers, but we need some really creative people, because stuff like this is going to happen. It's space. So what did they do? They implored a researcher. His name was George Lamb. And they needed more creative thinkers. So they said, look, we have no problem finding people with high IQ. We can find the smartest people in the world, but we need some creative thinkers. So all right, we need to find a way. How do we figure out during our process of interviewing, how do we weed out, or how do we figure out, does this person creative, or are they just really smart? And so Land and his team came up with a great way of figuring out levels of creativity. It was a huge success. NASA was now able to figure out, okay, this candidate is good, this candidate's creative, but this candidate is amazing. They're super creative and they're very smart. The problem that they found is not only could they could now figure out creative levels and creativity in people, but they couldn't figure out how to measure it, as far as how do you figure out, is it something that it's learned? Is it something that's inside you? Is it innate? Or is it unlearned? They had to figure this out. They didn't know what to do. So NASA looked at George Lamb and said, okay, let's do a bigger test. This test group is pretty easy. These questions are pretty easy. So go ahead and do this. Figure out and find more creative people. So we'll start with children. That's what they did. They took the questions and they gave a sample to 1,600 5-year-olds.
That's a lot of kids.
1,600 5-year-olds, and the results were quite amazing. They learned that 98% of 5-year-olds are what NASA would describe as creative geniuses. Let me pause for a moment. 98% of 5-year-olds weren't just creative, they were creative geniuses. You are created in God's image. You are created to be like Him. You're the only creature that is. You are just like your Creator. Not only did He design a spot in your heart for Him to reside, but He also made you to be created just like He is. So NASA did a long-term study. Okay, this is amazing. 98% of kids at the age of 5 are creative geniuses. Well, let's keep going. So in your notes, you found out, we already talked about 98% of 5-year-olds are creative geniuses. As they kept taking this test, they kept doing the same sample, and probably did it with the same kids. They found out 5 years later, at age 10, it goes from 98% to 30%. That's a dramatic drop in creativity. But even more so, it more than doubles in loss. At age 15, children go from 98% when they're 5 to 30 to 12% of children, 1,600 children, 12% of them are now creative geniuses. The rest are just okay. And then at age 32, I thought this was amazing, that percentage goes down. It goes from 98% down to 2%. So what happens? They find out that everyone's created by nature. You are made that way. God created you to be creative, but somewhere along the way, you stopped learning how to be creative. It's in you, but rather you unlearn how to do it. And that's what the enemy does. The enemy wants to destroy you. He wants to do whatever he can. It's more than just telling you lies. Yes, he will tell you lies, but he'll hold back truth. He'll make it partial truth. He'll do whatever he can to blur your image, to make you change, to do whatever he can to get you away from God. He doesn't just do it with the puzzle pieces. He'll go step by step. He'll start at a young age. You're 5 years old and you're a creative genius. What can I do to get you away from the Creator? You're this little and you're just like Him, and I gotta get you away from that. This is what the Bible says. He's not like you and he's not like me. Says the thief, when we're talking about the enemy here, does not come except to steal, to kill, and to destroy. Jesus is talking here. He says, I have come that you may have life and that you may have it more abundantly. See, the enemy of your soul can't create anything. He can only do 3 things. We give him credit for a lot of other things, but there's only 3 things he can do. He can only steal, kill, and destroy. But he can't create anything on his own. So if he's going to distract you away from God, he's going to start at a process. Build your puzzle. Make it what you want. As long as God's not your centerpiece, you're good. Want to be creative? I'm going to take that out of you. I'm going to give a step-by-step process of where I can figure out where, when you're 31 years old, you're so far away from the Creator, only 2% of people are creative. That's an amazing, amazing stat. So tonight we're going to talk about three different ways that the enemy attacks your creativity. It's his goal to steal it, to kill it, to rob you because he's jealous of what you are. You can do something that he wasn't created to do. He was never created to have an imagination and be a creator like you and I. He has no creativity at all. So he's going to do these things. And the first one he does, three ways in your notes. Number one, it's not that. He lowers your expectation. Through fear, through negativity, whatever he can, he's going to start with lowered expectations. Let me ask you a question. Does a five-year-old lower their expectations? When they start imagining and start creating and they say, oh, what if this and what if that and this would be amazing and what if we flew over the moon and all this stuff, and then you would tell them, no, that you can't do that. But what's the first question they're going to say?
Why?
Exactly. Well, why? No, we can do that, but tell me why. No, that doesn't, but why? You hear why all the time. It drives you crazy sometimes just because I said so. I don't know if you've ever heard that. I've actually said that many times. I've been around a lot of kids. And, well, why? Because it's infinite. But why? Because that's the final thing. But what happens is when you hear that enough, when you get told no enough, and you're afraid of what happens, then this is what you do. You learn at an early age to stop saying what comes to mind, but to say what you perceive is correct. See, when you're little, you just jump right in. You have no problem with grace because you have no lowered expectations. God's always going to love me. God's always going to take me back. Mama, Daddy, they're always going to hug me. There's no lowered expectations. But when you get enough negativity and you get enough rejection, then all of a sudden you start thinking, well, what am I going to say and what am I going to do just to get the right answer I think that person wants? And then you lower your expectation. You just say it's good enough. Like, I know I could have this ice cream cone and it'd be great. And this is just okay. Don't give me the large ice cream cone. Don't cover it in chocolate. Don't put the nuts and the cherries on it. No, I'm going to lower my expectation. I'm just going to have this. It doesn't matter what it is. Man, I'm going to do something big for God. No, I'm just going to do something small for God. It's okay. I've got a lowered expectation. It doesn't matter. This is good enough. You know what I can do? I can just touch the hem of his garment. That's all I got to do. No. I don't have to see Jesus face to face. I don't have to have a relationship with him. I don't have to see him look at me and smile and call me his son, his daughter. I mean, that's great. Those are amazing expectations, but I'm going to lower my expectations, and I'm just going to bow down and touch the hem of his garment. I mean, the whole world wants to look at this crowd. There's no way. God doesn't want to talk to me. He doesn't want to look at me. He doesn't even want to notice. I'm just going to be as nonchalant, as invisible as I can. I mean, look, there's all these people pushing him, and Jairus' daughter is sick. That's a baby girl. I've been dealing with this for 12 years. There's no way he's going to want to stop having a relationship with me. Just go ahead and let him go. When we lower our expectations, just like the woman who touched the hem of his garment with the issue of blood, but Jesus says, wait a second. When you lower your expectations along with your expectation, you lower your creativity. You stop being creative because you don't expect much. So this is what the enemy does. He attacks you with a lowered expectation, and it takes years. But he started when you were 5, maybe when you were even younger. And he's going to let negativity and fear of rejection cause you to lower your expectations. Then you don't think God's a big God. Secondly, he attacks you with self-glory. Or self-confidence is another word that I could use. I don't know about you, but the enemy knows, and most people know, I want to be liked. I want to be successful. I want to be popular. I want people to like me. I mean, I'm not a grouch who says I don't care if anybody likes me. Sometimes I'm a grouch and I say those things, but for the most part, I really care what people think. it causes a problem. It's a problem for most high schoolers. It's peer pressure. Middle schoolers, now even younger in elementary school, the pressure to be liked by other people is so large on people. I mean, there's a sickness out there that you can't help but touch your phone to check Facebook. Why? Because you want to see how many likes you have, how many people give you a thumbs up or a smiley face, because you desire that attention. You want to be accepted. Who doesn't want to be accepted? I know I do. And so the enemy does that. He starts with acceptance, being popular. And then this is what happens. So when we do that, when we start wanting to be popular, then in our mind, we start collaborating to find a way to be the smartest person in the room. I want to be the smartest person in the room. Well, how do I do that? Well, I got to talk to every person and ask them how they feel and how they think and see what they think. And when I ask you, hey, what do you think about this? Oh, you don't like that? What can I do to make it better? Okay, cool. Hey, I'm going to do this. You think that looks, oh, that's great. Then all of a sudden what happens is, I'm so excited to get that acceptance from other people that I stop creating myself. And I start going off of other people's thoughts and feelings and opinions. And so I lower my creativity by seeking the glory of other people or seeking my own glory. I want to be popular. I want to be liked. And so that's what we do. Or let's do it on the flip side. At a young age, we stop being creative because we realize it's easier to shut down self-expression than it is to deal with other people's negative opinions and reactions. I can be super creative, or I could not, because then I don't have to worry about what you say or how you react or how you feel or nothing. None of it matters if I just self-inhibit. You literally shut down your own creativity because you self-inhibit. I love how Peter says this. He tells the Corinthians, he says, Dear Corinthians, I can't tell you how much I long for you to enter this wide open, spacious life. Did we fence you in? Church didn't fence you in. The apostles didn't fence you in. The smallness you feel comes from within you. Your lives aren't small, but you live them in a small way. He says this, I'm speaking as plainly as I can. With great affection, open your lives, live openly and expansively. That's in your notes. I want you to take that home and I want you to look at that. Am I living my life small? Am I self-inhibiting? Am I restricting my creativity because I'm more comfortable? And then I go to God, well, God, I can't have this great life. I can't have all those things that you've that I can do. There's no way I can be this creative. There's no way it can be this big. There's no way this is going to happen because I've self-inhibited. And the whole time God's like, you know what? I didn't do that to you. I didn't put rules on you. I didn't put demands on you that says you can't be this creative. You put them on yourself. We self-inhibit because we're afraid of what other people might think or that what they might say. Or we're the other person. We want everyone to be so accepting of us. So happy of us that we're willing to forget our creativity just so that we can be liked. Thirdly, he attacks with control or security. Fear has gripped you at a young age now. He's been working on you for a while. I mean, even as a little kid, one of the worst words that I used to say all the time was mine. The hardest lesson for me to learn was to share. Now, Aaron, share. No, mine. Control. This is mine. You can't have it. So what happens is we get in this mindset of I can control what's mine. I don't have to worry about other people if I don't share my ideas. If I want to be creative, well, this is a great idea. You can have the best ideas all day long, but if you don't share them, you're just trying to control what you have. You know what? God gave me this. But if I don't share it, I don't plant it, it doesn't grow, it doesn't mature. I just hold on to my idea. We get this mentality of, well, what if I do share it? What if that person does it better than me? What if they take it and make it so much better? What if they do it way better than I, but I had this idea? We get scared. Because there's always someone bigger and faster and stronger than you and smarter than you. There's always. There's someone bigger than me, which is hard because I'm pretty big. They're smarter than me, which is not hard. They're more creative than me, which is pretty hard. I like to think I'm pretty creative. I like to think I'm over 31. I'm in that 2% range. I like to think that. But you're also in that 98% range you just forgot about, so we're going to go over that too. So we get a lowered expectation, we get issues of self-glory, and now we want to hold on to what God has. So not only what if someone does it better than me, but I know God gave me this, but what if he can't give me any more? What if this is all that I get? This is all the Play-Doh, all the creativity I got, and I don't get anything else from that. That's a scary thought. That's a very scary thought. We watched Shark Tank at my house. And what are these people doing? They're desperate to find investors because they want to come up. They have an idea. They've been creative. And they don't want to share it. They want to make as much money of it as they can. But they want to strike while the iron's hot because someone else will come up with something. They'll do it cheaper. They'll do it smarter. They'll do it better. But their whole life is they're in trying to be in control of their idea. They have this fear that there's no way that I can expect anything else to come from this. I already have low expectations. I already have control issues. The children of Israel had this problem. God tried to take it out of them when they left Egypt. Okay, guys, every day I'm going to give you manna for today. Then on Saturday, I'm going to give you enough manna for Saturday and Sunday because Sunday's going to be the Sabbath. But every day, this is all you get. And if you hold on to it and you try to save it, it's going to rot away. He was trying to teach them a mentality of don't worry about security. Don't worry about, is God going to provide tomorrow? You know what? He did it for 40 years. Every day. He provided water. He provided shelter as far as protection. He gave them manna. He gave them quail. He gave them everything they needed for 40 years just so that they wouldn't have to worry about control or security. God can provide everything. In fact, that's what God does. God is the God of supply. Our job is the job of space, which is one of the problems that we have. If this is all I have, if God fills me up with this much sermon, and I try to control it, and I hold it, and I keep it, and I don't ever share it, I don't ever pour it out, God can't ever fill me up with anything else anymore. So don't allow the idea of this is all it is. If he can feed a million people every day for 40 years, I think he can give me a little bit more tomorrow. I think he's big enough. I think he has enough. There's no reason why I can't be creative. I shouldn't be in fear of what I have today or what other people think. I should be able to let it go and don't worry. If someone makes this better than me, awesome. I'll just take their idea and say, well, look, I made it better and do it again. It's okay. Someone's going to do this better than me. People do this better than me. Whatever it is that I do, this right here, there's someone that does it way better than me. Your worksheets, there's someone that's more creative than me. But I'm going to put it out there. I'm not going to be afraid of it. It's kind of one of the things that I do with these series is I get them. And I've been asked, why don't you ever reteach them? Well, because that's what God gave me. I want to pour it out because I want him to pour something else in me. I want to let it go. I don't want to hold on to it. I'm not saying that I can't go back to it. But I also want to say, God, I want more than just this. But this is what the enemy attacks us with. He attacks us with lowered expectations, the acceptance of self-glory, and the worry of security. So let's stop letting the enemy steal, kill, or destroy our creativity. Creativity is by God's design. Think about it. What was the first job that was ever done? You got it. He's been reading my notes. The first job was a creative job. It was with Adam. God did creation, but God didn't name the animals. I can just imagine what it was like. I can see them. I mean, God had a relationship with Adam. He was intimate with them. They would walk every day in the cool of the afternoon. And we all know that wasn't in Texas because it's never cool in the afternoon in Texas. But when he starts bringing the animals to him, I can see God having a conversation with Adam saying, hey, Adam, look at this animal. What do you want to name it? Well, I'm going to name it an elephant. And God says, let me tell you about this elephant. See, this elephant, look how big he is. He's big and he's graceful, and his defense is his size. And then he brings this another animal and says, I think I'm going to call that a lion. Well, this lion has a roar that can paralyze the Serengeti. Just one roar from miles away, and its prey is paralyzed. Its defense is its roar and its presence. What about this? Well, let's name that a cheetah. Well, Adam, this cheetah can't roar like the lion, but man, he's fast. The lion can't keep up with him. He can run super fast. His defense is his speed. Well, what about that? The flying in the air. I'm going to call that an eagle. Well, an eagle can't roar and an eagle can't run, but an eagle can soar high above. His defense is his ability to be high in the air. And God said, I made all of these unique, but Adam, I made you unique too. See, you can't do all those things. But Adam, I gave you the ability to be creative. I gave you a brain. That's your defense. Your defense is your brain. God created you to have the ability to think and create. Animals don't have that capability. I'm not saying that animals are dumb, but they can create nothing. God put it in you. He told Adam, that is your defense. It's the ability to be creative. But guys, it's not learned. It's in you. It's already in you. You have the capability to be a child of the king. You got to be creative. Well, guess what? It's not something you got to learn. You just got to remember it. It's already in you. But here's what happens. When you stop creating long enough, you become a consumer. Come on. Here we go. When we stop creating, we become consumers. It's no longer what I can make, what I come up with, but it's more of what can I get from others. That's an issue that Americans face every day. We are more consuming society than we are creative. We produce way less than we consume. That's just who we are now. Why? Because we stop caring. We start wanting more of people's popular opinion. I want your opinion and your opinion. Why don't you like it on Facebook? You tell me what I think I should feel and look like. And then I'm going to go do that. I'm going to go consume that because you like it. So we're going to mix all this together. I'm going to stop being creative, and I'm going to start being a consumer. But the thing is when you create, you actually get closer to God. But conversely, when you consume, you move further away from Him. It also starts affecting your relationship and your prayer time with God. You have a hard time praying, having a conversation with God. Why? Because you start making it like a wish list, because now you're a consumer. You're no longer bouncing off ideas with the Creator. Hey, I got an idea. No, that's not what you're doing anymore. You're no longer creating. You're just like, I need this. I need this. I need this. Lord, I need this. Would you bless me here? God, I need you to do this. God, I need you to do that. God, would you please? Would you please? Would you please? And we start creating God like a butler or a genie. Lord, I called your name. I need this. I need this. Or you can do that, right, God? Go ahead. We have this idea of, well, I'm no longer a creator, I'm a consumer, and then we let it affect our relationship with God. And then we get frustrated with God because, God, I need, I'm not going to hurt anybody's feelings, but let's say a chair. God, I need this chair. I want it to be a wood one, it's a metal one. Let's just say this chair. God, I need this chair, or I need this table. Can you help me with this, Lord? I need this chair. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to pray without ceasing. I'm going to take the word. I'm going to pray every day in your name. I'm going to have faith believing. I'm going to have faith like a mustard seed. It's not going to fade. It's not going to change. God, I know you can give me this chair. I believe you can give me this chair. In your holy name, there's no one like you. I give you all the glory. And you just go time after time and prayer after prayer. And you spend all this time praying for a chair. And it just doesn't happen. And then you stop talking to God and start demanding of God. Look, I prayed. I said, I need this chair. I need this table. Where are you? Because because you're a consumer and you get so frustrated and you say, I'm done with talking with him. I'm done with praying with him because I needed that chair and you said you were my provider and you'd do anything I needed. And God's like, you know what? I love you and I am your provider, but I don't make chairs. I make trees. I make the trees. And you're the creative person that makes the table. Your need is already met, but you got to be creative. Make it to your need. Make it your table. Make it your chair. He's already provided everything that you need, but we get it in our head and we get so consumed and we forget about creating and we're like, I need this. And he's like, it's right there. It's a tree. God doesn't make tables and chairs. He makes trees. Don't get me wrong. There's nothing that God can't do. The Bible says everything was created through him. Nothing, not one thing came into being without him. Nothing is too big for God. But God wants us to learn something. You are a creator just like him. You can come up with what you need. In fact, he told Adam and Eve. He took Adam and Eve and God blessed them. Come on now. Come on. Don't do that. That's bad. There we go. God blessed them and granted them with certain authority and said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subjugate it. Put it under your power and rule over it. Dominate the fish, the sea, the birds in the air, and every living thing that moves on the earth. God looked at Adam and said, I made all this for you. And I gave you this amazing brain. Now go out and dominate with your thought, with your creativity. With what in the world is going on? It didn't do this in rehearsal, so I apologize. But it was acting up. It got tired. It wants me to hurry up and finish class because we got Play-Doh. Let's just do that. God created everything, but he created us to rule over the earth while we're here. If you need to seek him, seek him. I'm not telling you not to pray. I'm not telling you to ask. If that's what you need, God, I need a chair right now. I need a healing right now. I need a blessing right now. Go ahead and do that. But sometimes you got to be creative and imagine, God, I need this. How can I make this happen? I want to be creative like my Father in heaven. Look, being creative is a journey. It's not something you knock out the park the first time. We all know I've already messed up this lesson. If I ever do it again, I'm going to knock it out the park the second time. It is not out of the park. It is so not okay. I'm not worried about it. I really don't care if you're mad at me, but that's okay. I might get likes on Facebook. I might not. Hopefully I do. I've been averaging a really good amount of people, but I didn't knock it out the park today, right? I didn't get it on the first try, but neither is your walk with God. It's a process. Sometimes we confuse our destination with our destiny. We assume that if I get to this point, it hasn't been my destiny, but that's not how God works. He wants you to go through a process. He is more interested in your direction than he is in your perfection. Same thing with your creativity. He is less interested in if it's perfect, if it's out the park, than he is if you're creative and like him. We must always be creative. Now you gotta be a little cautious. I want you to prepare you that creativity has a half-life. In fact, I want you to assume that everything that you create only moves you one step forward. It's a process. God's not designing on you to have it all the time. He did not design the manna to be one-time manna and you eat off of that piece of manna for 40 years. No, it's manna today, it's manna tomorrow. It may be the same thing, but it's something created. That wasn't there the day before. He wants a fresh creation. He wants you to do that. Go ahead and get it in your mind. When I create something, it's going to get me closer to God, closer to him. But it's just that one time. The next time, it might be something different. I can't rely on that. I can't hold on to that. Or then I start getting controlling, and then I start getting frustrated with God. Because I'm not creating something new. I'm holding on to something yesterday. Now, I want to help y'all out a little bit. We're going to finish class tonight. I want y'all to give you three things that are help you be more creative. These are things things that I try to do in my life, I promise you, I don't do them all the time. But let's see if they bless you. So, ways to help your creativity. Number one in your notes. Put yourself in a position where you have to create. I love this example. I'm gonna let you finish writing. Put yourself in a position where you have to create. A little boy ran up to a high fence. He took off his hat and he threw it over. And a man nearby asked, "Why did you do that?" And he answered, "Well, I really needed to get to the other side, and I thought if I threw my hat over there, I would try real hard to get over the fence." Put yourself in a position where you have to create. I did that with this series. I had this in my head. I had it in my heart. I didn't have it on paper. I didn't have any media, any notes. I didn't have any of it. It was just something that was working in my mind. I wanted to do it. I wanted to create it. It was there. And then I said, okay, I got to literally put my hat over the fence and got to make myself do it. So I went to Pastor David. I said, I want to do this Bible series. Great. No hesitation. He never hesitates me. Okay. Still, we're good. Now I go into the office and I say, let's go ahead and put something on the calendar. Getting a little bit more serious. Okay. Well, I'm going to put it in the church announcements and you're going to do a video. Okay. Now my hat is over the fence. Because if I had said those things and y'all showed up week one and I hadn't done this class, I made myself say, look, life is busy, life is hard. I know this is in my head, and I can make all the excuses in the world not to be creative. I got good ones. I can tell you every single thing that I said to myself that would not do this, but I said, you know what? I'm going to throw my hat over the fence. I'm going to make myself do this. You got to do that with yourself, whatever it is. If you want to be on a diet, go ahead and go through your kitchen. Say, I'm going to go through the pantry, anything that has sugar in it. I'm going to throw it out, anything in the fridge, anything in the freezer. I'm going to throw this food out. I can't believe I'm wasting my money on this. But it's a way to make you throw your hat over the fence. Number two, when life is too busy and life is too hard to be creative, when in doubt, tidy up. I also use this example when I pray. Years ago, I had an amazing prayer life that I'll be honest with you, I don't do that like I used to. I used to have keys to the church. I used to go home every day on my way home from work. And I'd go in the church. I'd lock the doors. It's after hours. There's no one here. I'd turn off my phone, and I'd pray. I got rid of all distractions. There was no Facebook. There was no texting. There's no phone calls. There's no laundry at the house. There's no game I want to watch. There's no let's go eat. There's no distractions. I tidied up all the clutter of my life, all the distractions of my life. I got rid of all of them, and I focused on him. We got to do that when we want to be creative. When I want to be creative, I put my headphones on. I drown out all the noise. The laundry piles up. Who cares about the groceries? I don't care what you're doing, what you're watching. I put on music, and I block out the world, and I focus on being creative. But I also have to have it clean. If there's clutter everywhere, perfect example is for me, the way my life is determined on how clean my car is. The cleaner my car is, the more organized I am, the more creative I am. Can I be honest with you? My car's not super clean right now. It's okay, but I like to be like showroom or slightly better than showroom. Like, how old is this car? This looks like it's brand new. I know I keep it that clean. You're not allowed to eat in here. But I lately lowered expectations. I don't have time for that. So it's dirty. It's messy. But if I want to be more creative, I got to clean up. I got to tidy up. And it allows the creative juices to flow. Number three, take your lemons and make some lemonade. Take your lemons and make some lemonade. Here's a great thing about being creative. When you're creative, it can heal you and restore you. Take that which hurts you, which hinders you, which holds you down, and use that as the fuel to be creative. creative. Take it and use it. Whatever it is, whatever your creativity is, if you've been hurt by a family member, look, I'm going to write a book for other people to read. I'm going to do that. Why? It's going to heal me. It's going to help me. I'm going to take this horrible life, this lemon, and I'm going to make it lemonade. Well, I lost my leg in the war. Well, you know what you're going to do? Stop looking at the lemon and make some lemonade. Someone created the Wounded Warrior Project because they had lemons, but they made lemonade. Whatever it is in your life that you feel that's holding you down or hurting you, go ahead and take that and make it the thing you use to be creative, because it's going to bless you and heal you and strengthen you. Don't look at your situation and be like, God, I'm stuck in the mud. This is just dirty and messy and I can't move. And God's like, look, I know that looks like lemons, but you know what? That's not just mud. That's clay. Why don't you take that clay and why don't you form some vessels so that I can pour my spirit on that, and then you can spread my spirit out, because you've made vessels for other people to take here and here and here. Don't look at the lemon. Make some lemonade. I didn't ask Janie. She wasn't here tonight. I was going to ask her before class, but Reuben and Janie, if you were here Sunday, you heard them talk. What did they do? They took their lemons and they made lemonade. The Sozu House Project is based off of someone's lemon, and they said, we're going to use it to our advantage and we're going to make some lemonades. Don't be afraid of your past, that people are going to judge you on it, when you can take it and make something creative that someone needs and will bless them, because they're probably going through the same thing you're going through. Here's the big point I want you to get in your head tonight if you can. I tried my best to teach this. Creativity is something that's not learned. It's in you. You were created that way. We just got to get back to it. It's like riding a bike. You never forget how to ride a bike. You just got to get on the bike again. I want to be a child of the King, and I want to be like my Creator. That means I need to be creative. Whatever that is for you, I don't know. I know what it is for me. I create sermon series. I take bits and pieces and I put ideas and things that God puts in my heart and I put them together and I make this stuff. It's not lemons. I hope it's good lemonade. But I want to be a child of the King. I got to get into my head. And true creativity is an act of kindness and an act of love. It's never about the money, but more it's about the heart and soul and strength of other people. If you want to have the most impact in your life, you say, okay, Aaron, I'm going to take this. I'm going to be a child of the King. I want to be creative. I want to get back on that bike that I forgot when I was 5. The fun stuff when everything was possible. And if it wasn't there, let's go ahead and make it. I mean, who had a castle, but how many of you made tents in your living room with your bed sheets? I made a fort at my house all the time. One of our favorite things to do. It doesn't exist. Why don't we just make it? We can just create it. We can have the best fun. We can make little cubbies and we get the pillows, get all the pillows and all. Mom, do we have more blankets? Why? Because we're making a giant, and everyone has to have their own room. We have a giant fort. Everyone's got their own room. Where's yours at? It's by the fan because those things get hot. There's no circulation. We don't have AC. But when I was a kid, I'd have so much fun creating, and I want to get back to that. Because it'll never leave you to a dead end. When you create, guess what? If it doesn't work out, if you don't knock it out the park, it will lead to the next thing. Oh, I tried this and it wasn't it. Well, no, but it'll get you to the next thing that is. Don't be hesitant to create, because God put it in you. You are already created. Allow God this week to touch your heart, to touch your mind, to seek Him. Say, God, I want to be like You. God, I want to stop consuming. I want to start creating. I don't want to just ask for the table and chair. God, I want to see the table and chair in that tree. I love sculptures. I love them. They're my favorite piece of artwork because someone saw a stone and made a beautiful piece of artwork. It was a rock, and look how amazing it is. I have seen the statue of David. It is beautiful. It is out of proportion, but it is amazingly beautiful. It's one of the prettiest things I've ever seen. I've been to the Vatican where the artwork is amazing, and there is a giant room of paintings all over the ceiling, and I took a camera and went like this, and just walked through the room as fast as I could, getting by everyone, and just say, just follow me, I'm big, I've got shoulders, I'm knocking everyone out of the way, because I wanted to get to the room where the sculptures were, because to me, that is creativity, unbelievable level of creativity, to take something that looks like a rock, something that looks like mud, something that looks like a tree, and make it into something beautiful, and I have it, and you have it, and it'll never be wrong. Let's bow our heads and let's pray. Lord, we love you tonight. We give you all the glory and praise. I thank you that I am a creative person. I might be at that 2% right now. I might be at 2%, but it's still in me. There was a point where I was 98. I was a creative genius. Lord, put in our hearts and our minds this week as we seek you some new life, new creativity. Let us stop consuming. Let us look at situations, God. Am I lowering my expectations? Am I trying to put you in a box? Am I trying to go for my glory and my praise? Am I self-inhibiting and holding back because I fear what other people say? Am I afraid that you can't give me something tomorrow? God, you gave me this series this week. I have 2 more weeks. What's going to be next week? What if I get rid of that one? Are you going to give me more? Are you the God, a God of supply, who owns the cattle on 1,000 hills? It is my job to make space. Let me take what you've given me now and make it something amazing for the benefit of other people's hearts, minds, and strength. For your glory, in Jesus' name. Amen. Guys, thank you so much. Take the Play-Doh home next week after class. Cupcakes and sodas. Out downstairs in the lobby. I hope you can stay. We're going to have hopefully a lot of cupcakes and hopefully none go home because I don't want that sugar in my house. But guys, I love you. Thank you so much for coming this week. Thank you for watching at home on Facebook. If you love this class, you want to hear it again, we are going to download it on the podcast. Download it. Listen to it again. Let it bless you over and over again. You have a wonderful week and I'll see you all next Tuesday, guys.
I bet you they